Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, folks. You're on Big Blue Views Audio Lineup. I'm Joe DeLeon, joined by Nick Filato and Chris Fum, coming at you here on a Victory Monday, recording and giving you this episode on a Tuesday. Giants defeating the Philadelphia Eagles, NFC East rival, 13-7, in a painfully low-scoring game. We were talking about this before the show, and I think that the best way to approach this one, we kind of hit on it, Chris, a little bit during the live stream, but this game was just messy across the board, it felt like, for both teams. Now, there were some positive things that we can take away from it, and a win is a win. You can't take away from the fact that they won the football game, but it was a dumpster fire throughout the entirety of it for a number of reasons, and we're going to unpack that today.
Yeah, there's kind of a saying that goes around is that more teams lose games than win games, which is one of those things where if you kind of think about just the math of it, that's impossible. Half as many teams win games as lose games, or yeah, it should be split right down the middle. But yeah, this was a game where I would contend that the Eagles lost this game. We talked in the live stream about how, their decisions on offense were absolutely inexplicable. The play of their quarterback, Jalen Hurts, his play as a passer, the play of their wide receivers was just bad. Credit to the Giants. They did take advantage of the Eagles' derps, but the Eagles also made too many of them almost to not take advantage of. But that being said, there are some things I think we can get into and some, details we can maybe spin forward, for the remainder of the season.
No doubt, man. And you're right. I do believe the Eagles more so beat themselves than the Giants, came out and won this football game. But one thing I do want to acknowledge is the best unit in this game, to me by far, was the Giants defense. So there's something to be said about that. Now, with that said, Giants defense did what? They forced four turnovers, scored absolutely 0 points off those four turnovers. And again, you can kind of throw the last or the Tay Crowder interception out the window because that was a turnover that ended the first half. But regardless, it's not like the Giants offense were really capitalizing on what the defense was giving them. And with all that said, the Eagles were driving down the field with 2 minutes left in the football game. They forced a fumble, recovered the fumble, went three and out the Giants offense, gave the football back to Jalen Hurts. And then really the only reason why the Giants ended up winning the football game was because Jalen Reagor ended up dropping a touchdown pass. So there's so many things that kind of ended up going the New York Giants way. It seemed like Philadelphia just couldn't get out of their own way. You had Greg Ward drop a touchdown pass right before the Tay Crowder interception. You had Jalen Reagor drop another touchdown pass earlier in the game. And I'm not saying the Giants didn't deserve the win or any of that. I'm just saying Giants benefited from a lackluster Philadelphia Eagles offensive performance.
Yeah, even on top of that, you had that drive. It started with a really kind of ticky-tack holding penalty on Nate Herbig to move the Eagles back, 8 yards or so to start their drive. And then they had a Boston Scott touchdown wiped out by another holding penalty. That one was a little bit more egregious, but refs let worse go throughout the course of pretty much every single game. There was also Dallas Goedert. He dropped a pass where it just kind of bounced off of his hands. Now, there was a Giant in really good position, but the Giant didn't get a hand on the ball. It was really Goedert who let the ball just doink off of his hands. And the Giants, I felt, I don't want to say they got lucky, but they definitely did benefit from the Eagles spending all games stepping on rakes instead of stepping up.
Yeah, and that's honestly was definitely the theme of yesterday's game that, like you guys highlighted, Giants did enough to take advantage of egregious errors that the Eagles made. And we've said that pretty much every single time that the Giants have won has been literally because of that. It's the opposing team just making really, really dumb mistakes. Giants offense doing just the bare minimum to keep them above water and keep a lead towards the end of the game and to put them in a position to ultimately win the football game. And we're going to talk a little bit about the defensive stuff that you guys had touched on. But I'd like to take the angle of talking offensively here. We had no Jason Garrett calling the plays. He is gone. He is done. Instead, Freddie Kitchens was the man who took over as the interim offensive coordinator. Now, they only scored 13 points. They didn't necessarily have an explosive offensive day, and it's not like they were facing off against a top three defense and only scoring 13 points. So that's certainly not a positive to see here from the overall output. But I feel as though, and I said this on the live stream, that there were at least some positives to the change in approach to play calling by Freddie Kitchens. And again, I know 13 points, that's abysmal. That's terrible. But my whole thing here was at least I didn't feel like on every drive they were going to go three and out. I at least thought that they could have moved the ball down the field a little bit, maybe put themselves in a position to score, get close to scoring. It was at least a little bit better than what Jason Garrett was doing. And I know that's not much, but it's still slightly better than what we had going for us previously.
Yeah, I'd say the results were no different. The Giants offense continues to be bad. However, I like the process a lot more. I like the way they used motion prior to the snap to really try to force the Eagles to declare their intentions. They used a bunch of different formations we hadn't really seen before. They used a lot more route combinations to create voids in the defense, you know, manipulate defensive backs, create natural picks or at least natural obstacles downfield that basically shield defenders from the receiver. And I think that created a lot more open passing windows for Daniel Jones to throw into. Now, overall, the passing game, it wasn't great. It was still a really short range passing game. I think the Giants only averaged about 4.5 yards downfield in their passing attack. Their run game was basically non-existent. Outside of two runs, they averaged less than a yard a carry. Saquon Barkley had 9 carries for less that totaled to -1 yard. But the process, the way the Giants went about calling their offense, especially when they were early and still likely in their scripted plays, it was really a breath of fresh air to me.
It was. And another thing I liked about it was they called 1st and 10 vertical concepts early in the game. And I felt like they came out passing the football on first down a solid amount, but they kind of strayed away from that as the game went on and they kind of stuck to running the football for no gain or a 1 yard gain. So the first play of the game was a vertical concept. There was 11 personnel with an H back and nothing really ended up happening from that. They ended up going to the inverted wishbone zone read quarterback keeping the second play. But then on the second drive, there was another 1st and 10 where they ran another vertical concept from a reduced stacks, had a switch release, I think, involved in that. So you just like the fact that they're giving Daniel Jones the opportunity to see if you like something downfield and then attack it with multiple routes heading downfield, not just one to clear out like an out route or a quick slant or something like that. So I do like the fact that there are aggressive contingencies built into certain play calls on more run down type of situations like a 1st and 10. That was another thing that I kind of noticed from Freddie Kitchens' play calling. I do kind of wish he was a little bit more, I would say, aggressive down the stretch of the game in passing the football on 1st and 10, especially because we just saw the Giants time and time again attempt to run the football and it just absolutely failed. Guys, when's the last time a Giants team, other than like the last like 2 or 3 years, has been like this abysmal at running the football on early downs? I just feel like it's almost like just a throwaway. Like the best situation is if you get to a 2nd and 7. It almost seems like I'm like,
see, I would say when Pat Shurmur was the offensive coordinator, but he was still producing semi better results than what we've seen this year.
Yeah. Maybe that stretch of games where they had Brett Jones and DJ Fluker working together, because those guys could at least create a hole. You know, the running backs the Giants had to choose from there were not great. And yeah, Ben McAdoo's play calling was bad. But at the very least, those two guys together could reliably open a hole. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, Fluker, as as powerful as he is, as big as he really struggles to stay on the field. And you know, for some reason, Brett Jones' stretch of seven, honestly, not bad games as the Giants center didn't translate into anything. And yeah, he got traded, and his career more or less fizzled out. Actually, not more or less; it just fizzled. But I think that's the last time the Giants. You know, you hand the ball off on early downs, and it had a chance of being successful, which I think is kind of an interesting thing. Like, I know there are people out there who listen to us saying, "Why didn't the Eagles run more? Why didn't the Eagles run more? Why did they throw the ball 33 times when they were averaging almost 7 yards a carry?" And then those same people are probably saying, "You know, why do these analysts always say, you know, the running game doesn't matter. You know, teams should be throwing the ball a lot more," and then flip over and say, you know, why weren't the Eagles running more? Well, to me, that's because there are approximately two teams in the NFL right now who should be running the ball at least as often as they're throwing it, if not more often. The first one is the Baltimore Ravens, because they've got Lamar Jackson, and Lamar Jackson is actually a competent passer, in addition to being a freakish athlete. The other is the Eagles, because Jalen Hurts is a good runner, but not exactly a competent passer. You know, for the other 30 teams, they should probably, you know, balance for them should probably err more towards the 60-40 run pass split. And I definitely include the Giants in that.
So I'd say the Browns could be.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Sorry.
I would say the Browns could be considered in that as well, just because Baker Mayfield, I'm not sure if it's the injuries or what's going on there, does not look all that great throwing the football as of right now. So I think the Browns could be considered. But you're right, Chris. A lot of these teams should be sticking to the quick passing game, quick game, all those little type of concepts, get the football out of their hands. But I wanted to pose a question to both of you guys, because we've seen Joe Judge down the stretch of games this entire season be a little bit more conservative. How much do you think Joe Judge's conservatism is linked to his confidence and trust in Daniel Jones?
Yeah, that's honestly something I've been wondering myself. We have seen, I think, Daniel Jones get away with playing with fire kind of all season long. Yeah, it was, I think it was Avante Maddox who couldn't quite haul in the interception on it looked like an overthrow towards Evan Engram out towards the sideline. I think it was the first six games or so before the Rams game. Jones had at least two passes bounce off defenders' hands where he just threw it right to the defender each game. And yeah, those tend to get forgotten about because they weren't actually interceptions. They're just fell incomplete. But you do that often enough, eventually the defense is going to hang on to those passes. And yeah, I do kind of wonder if that isn't why the Giants scaled their passing offense back and made it a lot safer, more very high percentage passes. That's something I actually want to talk to Mark about when we get a chance to talk to him.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? for sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
So, you know, the one thing I want to wrap up this offensive discussion about here is, I know that we're going to constantly be talking about Daniel Jones, but like, do we think that Daniel Jones looked more comfortable with this new style or offensive approach with Kitchens, or are we still just on the same page as we were a couple weeks ago where we're still kind of frustrated with what Daniel Jones has been doing?
I think the latter, to be honest. I think it's like Daniel Jones to me is a week by week basis. We're going to evaluate him. I'm comfortable as of right now, especially with the lack of upside, it seems like, coming out of the 2022 NFL draft at the quarterback position, allowing Daniel Jones to be the quarterback next year, see if he progresses even more. But it's not something that I'm necessarily inspired by, because Daniel Jones, I feel like, isn't a quarterback that is proving consistently to elevate the team around him. He's more of a quarterback that kind of all the variables need to be pretty solid around him in order for him to reach his maximum potential. Or maybe I should phrase it like this: in order for the Giants to be competent enough offensively to win football games, which is something that you need to obviously do if you're going to make any sort of noise in this league. I mean, even teams that have excellent defenses, I think the Giants defense is good. It's a good defense. I wouldn't say it's a top five defense, but even if you have that, you still need the quarterback who can do enough and not make those mistakes that Daniel Jones makes in order to win football games. And Daniel Jones has still proven this season that he makes a lot of mistakes that can cost you football games.
Yeah, I think I am still frustrated by the fact that he's still making a lot of the same mistakes he made as a rookie. And, you know, he got away with them as a rookie and he's getting away with them now. But yeah, I'm not sure how sustainable getting away with that is. However, I think the Giants offense right now, and we saw at the end of last year, it's really trending towards making Jones a game manager where, you know, you let him scramble, you let him do some quarterback keeper runs, some zone read runs, you know, just enough to slow down the defense, keep them off balance. Let him make some quick, high percentage throws to keep the offense moving and just kind of hope eventually somebody gets loose or you're able to string together enough plays that you can get in scoring position and maybe a tight end nobody's ever heard of or your left tackle can catch a touchdown or, you know, in Graham Gano, we trust. Yeah. I am a little bit worried that Jones is trending toward basically being a really good backup quarterback. But, you know, like Nick said, being in a position where everything has to be perfect for him to be a quarterback you can win with, as opposed to, you know, maybe not a quarterback who elevates the play of everybody around him, but a quarterback who allows the players around him to play their best.
So flipping the script here defensively, guys, this was a really good game for the Giants defense in terms of just output. The four turnovers that we mentioned earlier, three interceptions, and the fumble recovery in crucial situations where they needed stops and they needed to get the ball back. Now, they didn't really capitalize on these turnovers, but it certainly helped keep that Eagles offense in check in situations where probably we're throwing the ball a little bit too much. So the one thing that I would like to pose, and I think we're all going to be on the same page here, is how much credit do we give to the secondary for the performance that they have with those interceptions and the, just the overall play? Or do we chalk this up as Jalen Hurts playing at the level that he's really only capable of with the amount of mistakes that he had?
I would say the game plan for Patrick Graham was to force Jalen Hurts to throw the football. And Nick Sirianni, you know, was just like, you know what? That's your game plan. I'm just going to play right into that game plan initially. I don't really know what Sirianni.
Bad choice.
Yeah, it was not a good choice because once they committed to running the football and using Jalen Hurts on the zone read game, it was was not good for the New York Giants. And the defense did not play all that well with containing him. But every time they dropped back the pass, I felt like the pass rush did a good job containing him and not allowing him to break away for big runs. But I would say the secondary deserves a ton of credit. And they just took advantage of a quarterback who's not necessarily fully, I guess, adept at passing the football right now. The Darnay Holmes interception, he just kind of finished running the receiver's route, was playing over the top, and was just eyeing Jalen Hurts the entire time. And then once Hurts threw the football, he just beat the receiver to the catch point. Tay Crowder's interception was just kind of inexcusable on Jalen Hurts' part. But you could see early on in that rep, it was man coverage. Crowder just attaches to that player in the flat, and he just eliminated any options for Jalen Hurts. The entire Giants defense did. They were playing, you know, the two guys in the middle of the field, kind of like a double buzz type look, man coverage, something they've been showing a lot since the Kansas City Chiefs game. And I think Aziz Ojulari and another player broke through, and Jalen Hurts just panicked and threw it right to Crowder. And then the Xavier McKinney interception was, I believe, a too high look pre-snap that kind of went into one high, and it was to the boundary. So McKinney was just eyeing Hurts. Now that one was more of a bad decision on Jalen Hurts' part as well, but McKinney also has the range to cover the ground. And it just seemed like from the film I've seen, and I haven't watched the all 22 yet, it seems like the Giants secondary pieces were just kind of draped all over Jalen Reagor and Devonta Smith, James Bradbury, like eliminating Devonta Smith from this game. So I would say, you know, obviously Jalen Hurts did not play well, but a lot of it has to be credited towards the New York Giants and their ability to kind of shut down lesser competition, which I feel like if you look at the receiving core of the Philadelphia Eagles, the Giants should win that matchup. And they overcame injuries too. I mean, Adoree Jackson got injured in this game. Darnay Holmes got injured in this game. He forced Aaron Robinson into the game, and they were trying to pick on Robinson. And Robinson did a good job, I would say, in coverage for a lot of the game, even though he kind of got beat on one play that Jalen Reagor, you know, cue it up, man. Jalen Reagor dropped that first touchdown in the, I think it was the first quarter. What is up with Philadelphia drafting these wide receivers that probably shouldn't have been first round picks, Jalen Reagor, Nelson Aguilar, and them just absolutely struggling with drops?
They need to reassess their wide receiver scouts. That's the only thing I can come up with. Devonta Smith, he can play.
Yes.
We'll just leave it at that. He does look still very skinny on the field. That's something I still kind of can't get over is how just rail thin he looks compared to pretty much everyone else. But he can play. He's got good hands. He can adjust the ball. He can run a good route. Everybody else on that on that offense and that receiving core, woof. Yeah, that's something they definitely need to address. Now, they've got three first-round picks. Maybe they can land a Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson or maybe a Tylan Burks. There's some decent receivers in this class. But this also isn't an Eagles podcast. So back to the Giants secondary. I would say that Joe is the guy with the busted-up face right now. But Sirianni was the guy acting like he got a head injury.
Yeah, no one in audio could see what's wrong with my face, but thank you, Chris, for letting me go.
This is why you folks should watch the live stream. One of us might take a header off of a scooter.
Exactly.
or as we prefer to say, steal the last piece of turkey from Will Hernandez and the insulting brawl.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling people is that I got into it with Will Hernandez, which might be more believable than me falling off of a bird scooter.
It is absolutely believable. Hernandez will get into it with anybody.
And it's also a lot cooler. But Nick, I want to say, though, that I thought the point that you made was really, really good, that Patrick Graham was daring this Eagles offense to throw the ball. And for whatever reason, Sirianni was like, you know, let's go for it. Even though we have a mismatch and we're not really built to go up against the secondary like this, we're going to keep throwing the ball. And it played perfectly into Patrick Graham's hands. And I think that that's why we saw the result that we did, was just overall poor decision-making by Sirianni And the crazy thing, too, we talked about here is that they ran the ball really well in this game. It almost begs the question of why didn't they just stick with running the football? It was bizarre to make that decision to attack downfield when it was literally producing no results, and if anything, negative results.
Exactly. And it's wild to me, too, because even early in the game, you had Miles Sanders ripping off like a 5-yard run, a 7-yard run, a 4-yard run, just getting chunk, you know, kind of possessing the ball, keeping the Giants offense off the field, tiring out this defense. And they just kind of didn't stick with that whatsoever. I mean, if you told me after this game or before this game, hey, look, the Eagles, they're like, you need to stop the Eagles from prevent the Eagles from rushing for 200 yards. That needs to be the objective, because in the two of the last three games or three of the last four games, they've rushed for over 200 yards. They won all three. And the one that they didn't win, they didn't rush for over 200 yards. Well, they rushed for over 200 yards on the New York Giants here. I think they rushed for 208 yards, yet they still lost the football game because of all the turnovers and just a ton of mistakes. Honestly, man, this loss for the Philadelphia Eagles reminds me of a loss the Giants would have suffered earlier in the season. Just shooting yourself in the foot, just dumb penalties at the most inopportune times, and just drop passes, just self-inflicted mistakes by the Philadelphia Eagles resulted in them losing this football game. But at the same time, the Giants defense deserves credit and it should not be devalued whatsoever.
Yeah, it is frankly amazing how well the Eagles ran the ball without even really trying to do it. You know, they were not, you know, seriously committed to the run. I think they ran the ball 31 times and threw the ball 33 times. Daniel Jones had more carries than Jalen Hurts, even though Jalen Hurts had more yards than more rushing yards than the entire Giants offense. I was honestly surprised that they didn't use the zone read more, that they didn't use any wide receiver end arounds. I mean, you've got Jalen Reagor. He is dangerous with the ball in his hands. Why not try him on maybe a triple option play, get him and Hurts moving and flip Reagor the ball, give him the ball on a jet sweep, anything like that. And for some reason they didn't. And one of the things that really surprised me in late down situations, like third or fourth down, the Eagles had, I believe, 13 of them. They threw the ball on 10 of them. Every time they threw the ball, it did not work. But every time they ran the ball, whether it was early down, late down, first play of a series, they were getting yards, and there wasn't anything the Giants could do to stop them. Their run defense was really more of a speed bump than anything else. And, you know, pulling guards, tight ends blocking, receivers blocking, it was all working for the Eagles. And for some reason, when it got to the most important situations, they just didn't do it. And, you know, the Giants, I think, have to be thankful for that.
Absolutely. And I like watching them run the football. I think they're an interesting team, and they use a lot of like trap blocks, a lot of wham blocks, you know, unblocked defensive linemen, allow them to penetrate upfield and then just crack them in the side of the helmet. I mean, they use a lot of interesting blocking methods to open up holes. And when you have a mobile quarterback like Jalen Hurts, you're going to have those backside defenders really be disciplined and stay put, because if they don't, they're going to get burned by Hurts. I think it's a unique setup that the Eagles have in terms of their ability to run the football. And it's just inexplicable that Sirianni kind of veered away from it. But hey, I'm happy. Giants got a win. There's never a bad moment when the New York Giants can defeat the Philadelphia Eagles, whether it be in Philadelphia or MetLife Stadium, when they're trying to make a playoff push and they're surging.
Yeah, I got to say, this offense is going to be, it's dangerous already when they don't forget what and who they are. It could be scary if they get a quarterback who is at least competent in the passing game. Now, whether that is Jalen Hurts developing, I'm not sure that's going to happen, or Matt Corral or Malik Willis, somebody like that. Yeah, I think from here on out, the Giants kind of want to see the Eagles pick up as many wins as possible and hopefully not drop down that draft order.
And hopefully Carson Wentz, you know, just doesn't end up, I don't want to say get hurt, because I would never say that, but the contingency in that trade is that Carson Wentz has to play a certain amount of snaps. And if he doesn't play that certain amount of snaps, then that first round pick is no longer a first round pick by the Indianapolis Colts, because they potentially have three first round picks, which is a crap load of picks that can really help replenish that roster that the Eagles have right now. So that's another thing to kind of monitor as the season goes on. But Wentz basically plays every snap, and even in blowouts, he's still out there sometimes. So, I mean, you got to kind of take that for what it is.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting game to circle back on when I think the Giants play the Eagles again in week 16, immediately after playing the Dallas Cowboys and just before playing the Bears and then finishing off against Washington.
So I think that's a good note to wrap us up on, guys. Giants play the Dolphins up next, so we'll be previewing that matchup coming up during the week. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.